Lecture 2. Quantum Black Holes. In my second lecture, I'm going to talk about the quantum theory of black holes. It seems to lead to a new level of unpredictability in physics over and above the usual uncertainty associated with quantum mechanics. This is because black holes appear to have intrinsic entropy and to lose information from our region of the universe. I should say that these claims are controversial. Many people working on quantum gravity, including almost all those who entered it from particle physics, would instinctively reject the idea that information about the quantum state of a system could be lost. However, they have had very little success in showing how information can get out of a black hole. Eventually, I believe, they will be forced to accept my suggestion that it is lost, just as they were forced to agree that black holes radiate, which went against all their preconceptions. I should start by reminding you about the classical theory of black holes. We saw in the last lecture that gravity is always attractive, at least in normal situations. If gravity had been sometimes attractive and sometimes repulsive, like electrodynamics, we would never notice it at all because it is about 10 to the 40th power times weaker. It is only because gravity always has the same sign that the gravitational force between the particles of two macroscopic bodies, like ourselves and the Earth, add up to give a force we can feel. The fact that gravity is attractive means that it will tend to draw the matter in the universe together to form objects like stars and galaxies. These can support themselves for a time against further contraction by thermal pressure, in the case of stars, or by rotation and internal motions, in the case of galaxies. However, eventually the heat or the angular momentum will be carried away and the object will begin to shrink. If the mass is less than about 1.5 times that of the Sun, the contraction can be stopped by the degeneracy pressure of electrons or neutrons. The object will settle down to be a white dwarf or a neutron star, respectively. However, if the mass is greater than this limit, there is nothing that can hold it up and stop it continuing to contract. Once it has shrunk to a certain critical size, the gravitational field at its surface will be so strong that the light cones will be bent inward. Even the outgoing light rays are bent toward each other and so are converging rather than diverging. This means that there is a closed, trapped surface, which is one of the alternative third conditions of the Hawking-Penrose theorem. If the cosmic censorship conjecture is correct, the trapped surface and the singularity it predicts cannot be visible from far away. Thus, there must be a region of space-time from which it is not possible to escape to infinity. This region is said to be a black hole. Its boundary is called the event horizon and is a null surface formed by the light rays that just fail to get away to infinity. As we saw in the last lecture, the area of a cross-section of the event horizon can never decrease, at least in the classical theory. This and perturbation calculations of spherical collapse suggest that black holes will settle down to a stationary state. A large amount of information is lost when a body collapses to form a black hole. The collapsing body is described by a very large number of parameters. There are the types of matter and the multiple moments of the mass distribution. Yet the black hole that forms is completely independent of the type of matter and rapidly loses all the multiple moments except the first two, the monopole moment, which is the mass, and the dipole moment, which is the angular momentum. This loss of information didn't really matter in the classical theory. One could say that all the information about the collapsing body was still inside the black hole. It would be very difficult for an observer outside the black hole to determine what the collapsing body was like. However, in the classical theory, it was still possible in principle. The observer would never actually lose sight of the collapsing body. Instead, it would appear to slow down and get very dim as it approached the event horizon. But the observer could still see what it was made of and how the mass was distributed. However, quantum theory changed all this. First, the collapsing body would send out only a limited number of photons before it crossed the event horizon. They would be quite insufficient to carry all the information about the collapsing body. This means that in quantum theory, there's no way an outside observer can measure the state of the collapsed body. One might not think this mattered too much, because the information would still be inside the black hole, even if one couldn't measure it from the outside. But this is where the second effect of quantum theory on black holes comes in. As I will show, quantum theory will cause black holes to radiate and lose mass. It seems that they will eventually disappear completely, taking with them the information inside them. I will give arguments that this information really is lost and doesn't come back in some form. As I will show, this loss of information would introduce a new level of uncertainty into physics over and above the usual uncertainty associated with quantum theory. Unfortunately, unlike Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, this extra level will be rather difficult to confirm experimentally in the case of black holes. But, as I will argue in my third lecture, there's a sense in which we may have already observed it in the measurements of fluctuations in the microwave background. One can consider a scalar field on this background. If the space-time were time-independent, a solution of the wave equation that contained only positive frequencies would also be of positive frequency. This would mean that there would be no particle creation and there would be no outgoing particles. However, the metric is time-dependent during the collapse. This will cause a solution that is positive frequency to be partly negative frequency. One can calculate this mixing by taking a wave with time dependence and propagating it back. When one does that, one finds that the part of the wave that passes near the horizon is very blue-shifted. Remarkably, it turns out that the mixing is independent of the details of the collapse in the limit of late times. It depends only on the surface gravity that measures the strength of the gravitational field on the horizon of the black hole. The mixing of positive and negative frequencies leads to particle creation. When I first studied this effect in 1973, I expected I would find a burst of emission during the collapse, but that then the particle creation would die out and one would be left with a black hole that was truly black. To my great surprise, I found that after a burst during the collapse, there remained a steady rate of particle creation and emission. This was just what was required to make the idea that a black hole had an entropy proportional to the area of its event horizon consistent. Black holes can also carry electric charges, so one might expect that they could also be pair-created. However, the rate would be tiny compared to that for electron-positron pairs, because the mass-to-charge ratio is 10 to the 20th power times bigger. This means that any electric field would be neutralized by electron-positron pair creation long before there was a significant probability of pair-creating black holes. However, there are also black hole solutions with magnetic charges. Such black holes couldn't be produced by gravitational collapse because there are no magnetically charged elementary particles. But one might expect that they could be pair-created in a strong magnetic field. In this case, there would be no competition from ordinary particle creation, because ordinary particles do not carry magnetic charges. So the magnetic field could become strong enough that there was a significant chance of creating a pair of magnetically charged black holes. In 1976, Ernst found a solution that represented two magnetically charged black holes accelerating away from each other in a magnetic field. If one analytically continues it to imaginary time, one has a picture very like that of the electron pair creation. The black hole moves on a circle in a curved Euclidean space, just like the electron moves in a circle in flat Euclidean space. There is a complication in the black hole case because the imaginary time coordinate is periodic about the horizon of the black hole, as well as about the center of the circle on which the black hole moves. One has to adjust the mass-to-charge ratio of the black hole to make these periods equal. Physically, this means that one chooses the parameters of the black hole so that the temperature of the black hole is equal to the temperature it sees because it is accelerating. One can always match the periods. As in the case of pair creation of electrons, one can describe pair creation of black holes by joining the lower half of the imaginary time Euclidean solution to the upper half of the real-time Lorentzian solution. One can think of the black hole as tunneling through the Euclidean region and emerging as a pair of oppositely charged black holes that accelerate away from each other, pulled apart by the magnetic field. The accelerating black hole solution is not asymptotically flat because it tends to a uniform magnetic field at infinity. But one can nevertheless use it to estimate the rate of pair creation of black holes in a local region of magnetic field. One can see each black hole separately as a black hole in asymptotically flat space. One could throw an arbitrarily large amount of matter and information into each hole. The holes would then radiate and lose mass. However, they couldn't lose magnetic charge because there are no magnetically charged particles. Thus, they would eventually get back to their original state with the mass slightly bigger than the charge. One could then bring the two holes back together again and let them annihilate each other. The annihilation process can be regarded as the time reverse of the pair creation. Thus, it is represented by the top half of the Euclidean solution joined to the bottom half of the Lorentzian solution. In between the pair creation and the annihilation, Lorentzian holes move far apart, accrete matter, radiate, and then come back together again. One might worry that the generalized second law of thermodynamics would be violated when the black holes annihilated, because the black hole horizon area would have disappeared. However, it turns out that the area of the acceleration horizon is reduced from the area it would have if there were no pair creation. This is a rather delicate calculation because the area of the acceleration horizon is infinite in both cases. Nevertheless, there is a well-defined sense in which their difference is finite and equal to the black hole horizon area plus the difference in the action of the solutions with and without pair creation. This can be understood as saying that pair creation is a zero-energy process. If information is lost in macroscopic black holes, it should also be lost in processes in which microscopic, virtual black holes appear because of quantum fluctuations of the metric. One could imagine that particles and information could fall into these holes and get lost. Maybe that is where all those odd socks went. Quantities like energy and electric charge that are coupled to gauge fields would be conserved, but other information and global charge would be lost. This would have far-reaching implications for quantum theory. It is normally assumed that a system in a pure quantum state evolves in a unitary way through a succession of pure quantum states. But if there is a loss of information through the appearance and disappearance of black holes, there can't be a unitary evolution. Instead, the loss of information will mean that the final state after the black holes have disappeared will be what is called a mixed quantum state. This can be regarded as an ensemble of different pure quantum states, each with its own probability. But because it is not with certainty in any one state, one cannot reduce the probability of the final state to zero by interfering with any quantum state. This means that gravity introduces a new level of unpredictability into physics over and above the uncertainty usually associated with quantum theory. I shall show in the next lecture that we may have already observed this extra uncertainty. It means an end to the hope of scientific determinism, that we could predict the future with certainty. It seems God still has a few tricks up his sleeve.